The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We're back at it after our exciting ministerial conference, thanks to all of the substitutes for filling in over the last week here and there. Yesterday, Dwight Falk, who's helping me on the production of the program here today, he got behind the mic to fill in after the day after the conference. But here we are a couple more days here in Edmond, Oklahoma, before we head back to Edstone, and still on a high from all of the instruction and the activities and just the general encouragement and admonition for those of us in the ministry as we now head out to look after the sheep and the lambs and to build up the church and to support this great work that God has given us to do. Little bit of an ice storm here this morning. For those of you here locally, you might give yourself a little extra time, as I tried to do. I instead of printing off my notes, I just brought my computer straight from the house to save a little bit of time, not having to go to the office. But it's not quite a solid sheet of ice, but it's definitely a rainy drizzle that is, I guess, about half frozen as it settles in on your windshields and on the roads. Hopefully it won't get too much colder today, because it could be, I think, quite treacherous if it does. Well, today is January 3rd. This is the 40-year anniversary of the State of California attack on the Worldwide Church of God. 40 years ago today, January 3rd, 1979, when Judge Stephen Wiseman marched into the WCG headquarters in Pasadena, California. And if you can believe it, he fired Herbert W. Armstrong, or so he thought. He waltzed in there and said, Mr. Armstrong's fired, and now I'm heading up the church. There was a program, a couple of them actually, that they produced, Mr. Armstrong and his team, back in March and April of 1979, to explain this this very unconstitutional attack on the Worldwide Church of God. And we'll play a few excerpts from that program here today, as well as a few other comments from Mr. Armstrong about this attack from Satan. That's what it was coming from, of course, ultimately, Satan the devil. But here to begin with, to just set the stage, this is from that 1979 World Tomorrow program that Mr. Armstrong and his team produced to explain what happened on that January 3rd day in 1979. Here's clip one.
The Ambassador College campus in Pasadena, California, has been the headquarters of the Worldwide Church of God for 32 years. Here on January 3rd began one of the most dramatic confrontations between church and state in 200 years of American legal history. The Worldwide Church of God was placed into receivership following a secret court hearing, a hearing of which church officials knew nothing. At the hearing, a deputy California attorney general presented a lawsuit alleging that the church was indeed so mismanaged as to be worthy of receivership. The lawsuit accused Herbert Armstrong and Stanley Rader of siphoning off the property and assets of the church for their own personal use on a scale of several million dollars per year. These alleged improprieties were said to have plunged the church into a financial crisis. This case, officially the State of California versus the Worldwide Church of God, could well become a landmark in the annals of church-state relations.
That's from the special World Tomorrow program from March 27th, 1979. Talking about this this attack on the Worldwide Church of God. Just to give you a little bit of background leading up to it, it really got off and running in the autumn of 1978 when six disgruntled and disfellowshipped Worldwide Church of God members, these six headed up by Garner Ted Armstrong in particular, but they devised this plot, this conspiracy against the church in the form of a class action lawsuit. Mr. Armstrong wrote a few years later, this is from June of 1985, he said, this resulted, this attack from these dissidents, this resulted in an ex parte order by a judge, secretly, without prior notice, deputies on order of the Attorney General's office swooped down on the church on the morning of January 3rd, 1979. And, of course, that launched what became the single greatest attack against the Worldwide Church of God. To that point, we know there were other attacks that came when Herbert Armstrong died. But here comes the state of California, and they just take the word of these six angry dissidents and waltz into the church January 3rd, 1979, and they say, we're here to take over. Here's another excerpt from that special program. This is clip six.
The California Attorney General's office contended that there were no constitutional issues involved in this case, that it was merely an investigation of financial matters. But church officials claimed that the allegations concerning finances were little more than a pretense, an obfuscation of the real motives behind the suit, which were to strike a crippling, if not death blow, to the church, at least in its present form. The true nature of the suit, said church leaders, could be seen by noting that many of the charges in the lawsuit were nothing but a sham, and that the office of the state attorney general could have easily discovered as much with only minimal effort.
If they really wanted to know, they could have just gone to the Worldwide Church of God itself, to Mr. Armstrong, and said, hey, we've gotten some reports that you're doing this, this, and this. Is that true? And Mr. Armstrong would have handed over anything that they wanted or needed to show them that this is completely, everything that we're doing is above board. It's all according to the laws of the land and the laws of God. As it was, they took the words of these angry dissidents and then got this order secretively. And the Worldwide Church of God, Mr. Armstrong, who was in Tucson, Arizona at the time, and that was something that God certainly orchestrated as well, but they didn't know anything about it. They just took these accusations, these false accusations, and of course this is something that shouldn't in any way surprise us. You see this happening a lot today. We've been talking a lot about that with respect to what's happening in the U.S. government today. But this is 40 years ago. And you see some of these same kinds of tactics. I just want to read through a few verses from Matthew 26. This was when they went after Jesus Christ. And they did it based upon false accusations. Matthew 26 and verse 46, it says, rise, let us be going. Behold, he is at hand that does betray me. That's Jesus speaking. And it says, and while he yet spoke, lo, Judas, one of the 12, came, and with the great multitude, with swords and staves, from the chief priests and elders of the people. Now he that betrayed him gave them a sign, saying, whomsoever I shall kiss, that same is he. Hold him fast. And forthwith he came to Jesus, and he said, hail, Master. And he kissed him. He said, Master. And then he went and gave him a kiss. It all looks so sincere and religious even. And we know what happened. Jesus said to him, friend, wherefore are you come? And then came they and laid hands on Jesus and took him. That's Matthew 26 and verse 50. But notice verse 59, a little further on, it says, now the chief priests and elders and all the council sought false witness against Jesus to put him to death. Now the next verse says that they couldn't find any. It says, but they found none. Yes, though many false witnesses came, yet found they none. At the last, it says, came two false witnesses. So they wanted someone to lie. They wanted to destroy this man and his reputation. And so they sought out false witnesses. This is the way that Satan operates. He works through men. He has pawns serving him. And that's what happened in late 1978 as he stirred up the spirit, the human spirit of these angry dissidents. And they came forward saying that Herbert Armstrong and Stanley Rader, his assistant, that they were just siphoning off all of this money for themselves. Lavish spending. That was one of the accusations. Clip two here is from that same program in 1979. We'll play that next.
Mr. Armstrong, do you feel that the church government or church rule is the real issue in this lawsuit?
Yes, I'm sure that's the main issue. Everything else is merely trumped up something. The ridiculousness of saying that Mr. Rader and I had siphoned off millions of dollars every year on a segment of the work that has an appropriation of only $1 million a year. It's the smallest appropriation of any department in our activities. And actually, that was merely an excuse. They were coming in to take possession without any evidence of any kind but a statement of six malcontents who were out to get even, to do damage. And so they came crashing in with the idea of getting all records and hoping maybe they could find something to accuse us of. But the real issue has now surfaced. The whole question is, who is the Lord?
That's Herbert Armstrong from 1979. He's answering his interviewer there. That was Art Gilmore who asked the question. But he says that they came in hoping, they wanted to take over, and then they were hoping to find something to accuse us of. You see a lot of that happening today with the Mueller investigation. And these same tactics, this is why this is important history to remember, because Satan's going to use these same tactics when he comes after his church again. And we know it's going to happen again. Amos 7 prophesies that. And there's other prophecies as well that we could focus in on. But here they came in. They made all these accusations about the appropriation of millions of dollars, as he said there. And Mr. Armstrong, he was traveling the world. Something like 300 days a year. He did fly on the G2 aircraft. He was meeting with world leaders. And the brethren, God's people, were well aware of it. The brethren, as we'll see here in a moment, they were very supportive of it, very excited about it. But six angry dissidents, malcontents, as Mr. Armstrong says, they wanted to do damage to the church. So they make all of these wild accusations. False witnesses, that's what they were. But really, leaving aside what happened to this million or that million, the real battle here was for control of the church. Control. The state, in collusion with these six disfellowshipped ministers, they wanted control of the worldwide church of God. They wanted to wrest control of it from Jesus Christ and his servant, Herbert Armstrong. So they wanted to come in and take over. Unconstitutional in every respect. Clip three here. It's from the same program in 1979.
The suit portrayed an almost classical scandal of misuse of funds, leading to financial crisis, leading to cover-up. But the most fundamental issues involved were not matters of real estate or finances. The suit contended that California state law requires that the Worldwide Church of God hold membership votes on matters affecting the governing of the church. Or in other words, the church must be essentially democratic in structure.
So this receiver comes in and he says that, well, we don't like your government. We don't like the fact that it's government from the top down. We think it should be democratic. This is the state of California coming in and saying, this is the way you should run the church. We're going to change the governance. This is in the United States of America. Mr. Armstrong, even as an American, was beside himself. Are you serious? And you know what? There were quite a few other religions, quite a few other denominations in the traditional Christian world that came forward and said on this, and they don't typically agree with Herbert Armstrong's teachings, but on this, they agreed with him. Here's clip 11 from that 1979 program.
But according to church leaders, any state law that is construed so as to interfere with the governing of a church is unconstitutional. Because in the worldwide Church of God, as in many, if not most other churches, church government is a doctrine as much as any other tenet or article of faith. And as in many other churches, it is a central, all-important doctrine, one that gives the church its meaning and vitality.
That's right. This was a teaching in the church, and everyone coming into the church knew about it. This reminds me of some of the things they were saying in the lawsuit that we had with Worldwide Church of God officials. Now, you have to read Raising the Ruins to get more of the story here, because as we know, after Herbert Armstrong died, that entire church fell away from the truth. There was a great falling away. There was false doctrine everywhere, delusion, strong delusion, again, coming from the devil. And those ministers that turned away from the truth, they brought up some of these same things that we heard all about in 1978 and 1979, the lavish spending, and oh, the government, the fact that Mr. Armstrong had final say, it was so evil, so authoritarian. And as we pointed out to those Laodicean ministers during our lawsuit over Mystery of the Ages, I remember one deposition in particular. This man was just describing how horrible it was to be a member in the Worldwide Church of God under Mr. Armstrong. And our lawyers asked him, well, did someone force you to come into that church? Why did you join it? You weren't forced to come in. And he admitted he was there of his own free will, just like all of those members were back in 1979. Here comes the state, spurred on by these six malcontents, saying that you can't have a government like that. So much for the free exercise of religion. Further on in this 1979 piece or this program, I think this one actually is a quote from Mr. Armstrong. Here was Mr. Armstrong's response to this charge. This is clip 5, by the way. Here's his response to this charge that the state said you can't have government from the top down. Mr. Armstrong said this.
And that's what the state of California had in mind when they came crashing down on the Worldwide Church of God. They wanted to appoint a new board of directors. They wanted it to be democracy. Now, it isn't democracy. And God's government is not democracy, and God's government is going to take over all the governments of this world.
And that's just a doctrine, as we pointed out with the previous clip. This is the teaching of the church. It always has been God's true church. You see the same government structure in the church today that we're about to see in God's kingdom over all the earth. Government from the top down, Jesus Christ as King of kings and Lord of lords. Imagine the state of California, or any state coming along into the wonderful world tomorrow saying to Jesus Christ, well, we think everyone else should have a say. We've seen this happen before. We've seen it with Korah's rebellion in the Old Testament. Free exercise of religion. This is a doctrine. The doctrine of God's government. What a confrontation. This state, the largest state in the Union, California, once the most prosperous state. Here comes this massive state against this comparatively small church saying this is the way you're going to do things from now on. Well, they didn't know what they were getting into, these state officials. As Stanley Rader wrote later in his book, Against the Gates of Hell, he said, "Problems have never upset Mr. Armstrong, and he reacted even to this serious threat with serenity, courage, and confidence." They didn't expect Herbert Armstrong to fight back. They didn't expect the brethren of the Worldwide Church of God to fight back. They didn't expect the brethren to support Mr. Armstrong. January 3rd, 1979, 40 years ago today, the next day or the day after, January 4th, 1979, Mr. Armstrong, he's confined to, he's recovering from his heart failure in 1977, I think it was. So he's in Tucson, Arizona at his home. He's out of state. And again, this turned out to be a huge blessing. God had prepared the church for this assault, this attack. He's in Tucson, and he's writing to all the members of the church, asking for them to submit emergency contributions because of this lawsuit. And, of course, all the mailing facilities were still in Pasadena. And this receiver, if you can believe it, he blocks that letter from going out to the members of Mr. Armstrong's own church. Well, the word eventually got out, and Mr. Armstrong said, "Look, you stop sending donations to Pasadena and send them instead to Tucson." Mr. Armstrong would not be deterred. He was not going to take this lying down. He fought back. Well, they had a hearing in court January the 5th, two days after the unlawful and illegal and unconstitutional takeover. And the judge in that initial hearing, there was no financial misconduct anywhere found. And so the court orders the records to be returned. However, this would linger on, and the receiver remained in place, sadly. But still, they took that just a few days into it. Mr. Armstrong took that as a great victory. They were just coming in to take over, to try to find a crime. There were no crimes committed. They wanted to take over to try to find one. Well, after that January 5th hearing, Mr. Armstrong one of his coworker letters, this is from January 7th, 1979, he said, "Our great God is still on his throne. God has given his work a tremendous victory against the most monstrous conspiracy and attack Satan ever launched against God's work." He says, "Last Wednesday, we had the astonishing situation of Christ's apostle having been put out of God's church under color of authority of the state government, and Wayne Cole made the head of the church by the state civil government. And that in a country," he says, "and that in a country whose very constitution provides separation of church and state." He says, "I've never heard of such a thing in all my life." Never heard of such a thing. Well, God was backing his servant. Here's more from that 1979 special, clip number 8.
While the plaintiffs had stated in their suit that the church would not be harmed by a receivership, the immediate result was the cancellation of a $1 million bank loan. Furthermore, thousands of church members apparently decided that they would not send their tithes to a receiver-controlled church, and the church found itself in an immediate financial crisis. Meanwhile, thousands of church members mailed donations directly to Herbert Armstrong in Tucson. And finally, in mid-March, church members, angered at this intrusion of the state into their ecclesiastical affairs, pledged over $2 million to post a bond and get the receiver out.
Get the receiver out. He comes in and says, "The church is going to be just fine. We're going to keep everything in operation, nothing to worry about here. And it did damage the church. It brought damage to the church immediately. But as I said earlier, Mr. Armstrong was not about to take this attack without going on the offensive himself. So there was that positive hearing on January the 5th, then he sends out the January 7th letter, and then later on, this is on January the 18th, Mr. Armstrong says this: "I thought on January 7th, when I wrote you, that God had then given us the victory in this decisive life and death assault against Almighty God, Jesus Christ, and God's church." He says further on, "No evidence of any wrongdoing or justification for this monstrous outrage against God's work has been found against us. Yet this case hangs on. We have been put in the position of fighting the battle of freedom of religion from the state, not only for ourselves, but for all churches and religions." And as I say, a lot of other religions stepped forward to show their support for Herbert Armstrong. Mr. Armstrong mentioned in that same letter that he knew of one minister, or he saw him preaching over the air and signing a check for $100 to support Mr. Armstrong and the Worldwide Church of God. In fact, he said that they were getting enthusiastic support from dozens of churches who saw right away, this is dangerous. If the state can just come in based upon rumors, slander, gossip, and take over the church, you can see where that would begin to worry churches all over the United States. Here's another clip, clip 12 from that 1979 special.
Well, in essence, this confrontation with the church and the state, don't you feel that in this fight you're really fighting for other religions, other churches, as well as the Worldwide Church of God?
Of course, because it's a matter of the Constitution of the United States and what rights it does give us, and it gives us those rights.
It gives us those rights. It sure does. This is why God put his headquarters in the United States of America. So much freedom. So much freedom. And look at the way that work, that church, prospered and all of the blessings it brought into the lives of millions and millions. Never mind what people say today who want to revise the history and say how, just like those Laodicean ministers, oh, it's so miserable. Oh, it's terrible. Oh, so many abuses. Well, they just look at the fruits. Read about it in Raising the Ruins. Here were religions coming forward, all of these churches, to show their support for the Worldwide Church of God in 1979. In that January 18th letter, Mr. Armstrong then called for a special day of fasting and prayer on January the 27th. So here is God's church, God's servant, taking action, calling upon the power of God to deliver his church from this assault, this attack. One of the charges, well, I'll just let the clip explain it itself. This is from that same program, clip 7.
One of the first acts of the court-appointed receiver on January 3rd was to fire Herbert Armstrong as executive head of the Worldwide Church of God. The state attorney general's office had apparently expected that church members would support his action against Herbert Armstrong. But the membership, generally characterized as conservative and non-political, responded in a fashion unheard of in the history of this particular church.
I love that. They say there that here's the receiver. And of course, if he's basing all of this on what six malcontents had said, He just accepted it. Oh, this must be the truth. I'm going to go in there and fire Mr. Armstrong, and they're going to give me a hero's welcome. He thought the brethren would support him. Little did he know, the membership, they responded in a fashion unheard of in the history, certainly in the history of God's church. in the history of the worldwide church anyway. This is a bit, I guess, in another sense, this is always the way God's people respond, with courage and faith. Here the church is attacked on January the 3rd, and 3 weeks later, church members demonstrating their unwavering support for Mr. Armstrong. They just, I forget how many thousands of members we had just in California, but they were coming to headquarters, not just from California, but from all over the world. Something like 3,000 people gathered. It was a spontaneous gathering. January 22nd, they started showing up in Pasadena. What started as a slow trickle, it turned into this flood of people, brethren of the church. And they descended upon the Hall of Administration on campus there in Pasadena, Ambassador Auditorium, the Student Center, and other campus buildings. And they brought in food and they brought in bedding. They were there to set up shop, to live, if they had to, for weeks. 3,000 people. Church officials, ministers, Dean Blackwell and Joseph Tkach come to mind. They started organizing all of these brethren and having church services in the Hall of Administration. And they were having a religious observance on their private property. So they locked the doors. And when the court-appointed receiver showed up for work, he couldn't get in. Mr. Armstrong, he's in Tucson at the time, remember? And he addressed the staff and those brethren that were showing up in a telephone hookup from Tucson to the auditorium in Pasadena. And he said, "The people of God have always been willing to suffer whatever they have to do for the living God." He says, "And I tell you, this has drawn us together." The church was going through lots of turmoil in the 70s. I mentioned those dissidents, those ministers that were put out, including Mr. Armstrong's own son, and it was a troubled time. Lots of Laodicean elements in the 1970s. He told the members just to make sure you're subject to the law of the land, but that, as it says in Acts, we're to obey God rather than men. And he said further in this address to the brethren and the staff at Pasadena, he says, "If we have to begin to suffer the persecution of being thrown in prison, I will be the first to go. God is fighting this battle for us, and God is stronger than man." That evening, this would have been January the 22nd, I believe, or 23rd maybe, there was a headline in the Los Angeles Times that said, "Ready for jail, Armstrong." He was leading the way. He was in his mid-80s at the time. By January 24th, a couple days in, there were 5,500 brethren filling those church buildings, the Hall of Administration, the auditorium. It's pretty amazing. The receiver called Stanley Rader and said, "Look, can we reach some kind of a compromise here?" There would be no compromise. Mr. Armstrong wrote in January, the end of January, January 28th, he said, "Now we need all the brethren to continue to rally behind Christ's apostle until a higher court releases the work from its virtual captivity." He says, "If arrested, our brethren would not have resisted. At all times, they have behaved like God's people, orderly, neat, polite. Many people outside our membership have noticed this and commented on it." By this point, it was a national story. It was on the news. It was leading the news, certainly in Southern California, but this was a national story. Another clip from that March 79 program. This is clip. This is Mr. Armstrong here in clip 9.
"Now, they thought we would cave in, They didn't realize the scope of our work. They didn't realize its size. They didn't realize another thing, the absolute integrity and loyalty of our membership. And they will see that money gets to me to carry out what God wants done, no matter what man does.
That's great. That's Mr. Armstrong saying, they came in, they thought, well, it's just a church. These are church people led by an old man, a senile old man, the way they viewed it. And so this will be easy. We'll come in there, we'll take over, nothing will change, and we'll control the money. We'll control the purse strings. We'll set up a more democratic form of governance. February 7th, 1979, Mr. Armstrong wrote, "This monstrous invasion of the state of California will go down in history for the next 1,000 years. This is a month into it. And he's talking about this monstrous invasion. And he announces in that same letter that we're going to take out full-page ads in the newspapers in this region, in the Wall Street Journal even. We're going to run multiple newspaper ads to fight back, to expose this evil, to expose this unconstitutional attack." One of the ads, it says, "During the 2 month term of the receivership, the church has lost $5.3 million in working capital. In addition, normal bank credit lines were curtailed and $1.3 million in demand notes were called. The first 6 weeks saw almost daily press, radio, and TV coverage emphasizing the allegations rather than the facts." All of these scurrilous allegations. Of course, that's what the media reported. No facts. This was fake news. This was fake news 40 years ago. Fake news in 1979. And one of Mr. Armstrong's ads said this resulted in irreparable damage to the church's moral reputation and its civic and legal credibility. It has damaged the church. These accusations, these false charges, these false witnesses, they just come forward and they want to destroy. Never mind the truth. Never mind the facts. No crimes committed. They just set out to destroy the Worldwide Church of God. And God didn't let them do it. They failed because they were fighting against God. Inspiring history. History we want to be very familiar with, because Satan uses these same tactics to this day. In March 1979, March 12th, 1979, Mr. Armstrong talked about how that this attack would actually be a blessing for God's church. "All things work together for good to those who love God," he said, quoting from Romans 8. "As long as we draw near to God, this will turn out to be a blessing. If it brings you closer to your Creator God, that's a good thing. Furthermore, persecution, just like in the days of Acts 2, it helped to spread the word." Mr. Armstrong wrote, "Now the early Christians, I said, were persecuted. God's church will be persecuted again, much greater than we're being persecuted right now." Just remember this. Remember this history. Remember what Herbert Armstrong said. God's church will be persecuted again, much greater than we're being persecuted right now. It says, though that will happen in a mass martyrdom, in the yet future Laodicean era. And don't let anyone tell you that there are not eras of the church. There are. This is some good history. former members of the Worldwide Church of God or those that have just fallen away from the truth, they would do well to get back into this history, to dig into Revelation 2 and 3, to look into church eras, to read and study the true history of God's true church. We make that available to you free upon request. Mr. Armstrong says further, but God's people always have suffered persecution. Now this is Satan's world, and the persecution is always instituted from Satan. He hates God's people. He hates God's truth. He doesn't want us to believe it. And yet Satan himself can do only what God allows. He says, finally, now that means that this persecution could not have come upon us if God had not allowed it. So God allowed it, and it actually turned out to be a great blessing for the church, just as Mr. Armstrong said there. And I'll get to that more in just a moment. But as for the litigation itself, after that receiver, Stephen Wiseman, after he saw very, very, very quickly that the church was not going to back down, he eventually, I don't remember the date, but he resigned, but Judge Tidal still appointed another receiver in mid-March of 1979. But just a little ways into it, the state of California very quickly realized that it had massively overstepped its bounds, and it was trying to extract itself from this fight because it didn't want any part of it anymore. Listen to what Herbert Armstrong said. This is clip 16. This is what he said in a sermon at the SEP camp later that summer. This is from July 1979, clip 16.
This is a case of where the government is the villain and is doing the wrong thing. And we're not going to let them get away with it. We're not going to let them. They would like to get off the hook right now. They realize that they attacked the wrong people. They know now they made a great mistake. And they'd like to get off the hook, so to speak, but we're not going to let them off the hook. And they're going to rue the day that they ever started trying to destroy the work and the church of the living God. Because that's what they did.
That's Herbert Armstrong speaking at the SEP, the youth camp, in July 1979, and all the campers together with the staff cheering, clapping. They are going to rue the day that they ever started trying to destroy the work and the church of the living God. They realize that they attacked the wrong people. What an inspiration to stand up and to fight for God. What a privilege and honor it is to do that. To be willing to stand up to the devil, to go on the offensive. That's what Herbert Armstrong did in 1979, and then later in 1980, the state of California finally dropped the lawsuit, or got out of it. And then soon after that, the California state legislature, it passed a law that basically said you can't do this to a church. You can't just waltz into a church and take over. That's unconstitutional. God's church won. Satan and his minions, they were defeated. But Satan is still around. And Satan is still going to look for ways to attack God's church and God's people. But look at the way God mobilized his troops. The fact that, as I said, Mr. Armstrong was already in Tucson, and that the funds could be redirected to Tucson. Consider the things that Mr. Armstrong did. There in his mid-80s, and of course, that was part of this litigation as well. They were making these charges that he was senile, Here's another clip, clip four from that 79 program.
The lawsuit implied that this man, Herbert Armstrong, by virtue of his advanced age, was no longer capable of leading the church. It was said he heeded the advice and counsel of virtually no one other than Stanley Rader, who was, in effect, depicted as manipulating the church founder.
So that was the insinuation. Mr. Armstrong was senile, and Stan Rader was controlling the church. Mr. Armstrong said in April, this is from a coworker letter, of 1979, he says, "Am I too old? Am I senile? Who else do you know at near 87 years of age who in 1 year turns God's worldwide church around, rooting out the dissidents, the false doctrines, being used of God to set his church back on his track?" Mr. Armstrong said, "It is not I who does it. It is God using me as his instrument. God brought me back to life from complete heart failure and death in August 1977 for a purpose." He says, "God's work is going forward now as never before in spite of persecution." God's work goes forward. 86 years old, almost 87. And he went on to explain in that same letter just how much God was now blessing the work, even as they were being attacked. Several lessons to take away from this, just in looking at how Mr. Armstrong and the church fought back. Look at what the membership did. Sending all the tithes and offerings to Tucson instead of Pasadena. Mr. Armstrong eventually moved a lot of the mail processing facilities over to Arizona. They were outside of the state of California. It was perfect. God backed them. God had arranged for them to be able to fight back right away from day one. And they did do that. The members descending upon Pasadena, the sit-in that prevented the receiver from taking over. We're exercising our rights to a religious observance, the free exercise. And we're doing it right here in the Hall of Ad, right here in the auditorium, right here in the student center. That was in late January 1979. The church at that time used its telephone network. This was before, of course, email and the internet. But they had an organized, finely tuned and orchestrated telephone network that contacted all of the members of the church. The receiver's going to come in there and say, "No, you can't send this letter out from Pasadena." Well, they activated this telephone network to get the members engaged in this battle. I told you about all of the full-page ads, telling the public, telling the world about what was really happening in Pasadena. They weren't getting the truth from the newspapers. And so Mr. Armstrong took out space, or paid for space in those newspapers, to tell people the truth, to tell them that they were getting a lot of fake news from these dissidents, from the receiver, from even the media. He wrote all those coworker letters. Read through them sometime if you have access to them. The coworker letters from 1979. A fair bit of it, I'm sure, is in those old autobiographies by Herbert Armstrong. But what a story they tell. Mr. Armstrong saying, "If this means we're going to have to go to jail, I'll be the first to go." And of course, if you think of some of the other things happening at that time, Stanley Rader writing that book, Against the Gates of Hell, telling that story, showing how Mr. Armstrong fought back against the devil's attack. He said, Mr. Rader did in his book, over the years of my close association with this remarkable man, he's talking about Herbert Armstrong here. He says, over the years of my close association with this remarkable man, I have noted abundant evidence that he is the embodiment of his own message of hope and trust, that the living God will provide man with the wisdom to prevail over obstacles. He is the embodiment of this message that he proclaims, that he teaches. And he quotes Mr. Armstrong in his book, saying, no matter how intelligent, alert, or resourceful you may be, you need God's wisdom and help in solving the constant problems and meeting the recurring obstacles that beset life's path, whether it is in business, a profession, private life, or what. He went on to say, Mr. Armstrong did, the man who has contact with God, who can take these matters, these emergencies, these problems, in the quietness of his private prayer room, to the throne of grace and to seek God's counsel and advice, is going to have divine guidance and wisdom from God. That's Stanley Rader writing about what Mr. Armstrong, or how Mr. Armstrong approached his life. He was the embodiment of this message that he preached. He talked there about how much he needed God for any emergency that might come along. And as Mr. Rader then wrote after that, I am certain that Mr. Armstrong took this grave emergency into the quietness of his private room, his private prayer room, to the throne of grace, and that he sought God's counsel and knew that justice and truth would ultimately prevail. Yes, indeed, he went into his prayer room. That's where the battle is won. Right there before God's throne room. There at the prayer rock. That's how the work goes forward. That's how we answer Satan's attack. That's how we respond to these scurrilous accusations, these false witnesses. Our response is to go to the great God of this universe, to cry out to God for wisdom, for strength, for deliverance, over and over again, all throughout the Bible. There's so many examples, and I think what I'll probably do is get into it more on tomorrow's program, because it is such a momentous anniversary, 40 years. January 3rd, 1979, the state of California's attack on the Worldwide Church of God. And if you know anything about the Worldwide Church of God history, you know that in the years that followed, there was some spectacular growth in that church. In that church. Now, we know what happened after Mr. Armstrong died, but just look back at the history and look at even God's work today. It's an extension of that. This church, the Philadelphia Church of God, God's work continues. 40 years on, look at some of the problems facing the state of California. Even to this day, lots and lots of lessons that we can take away from this history. As I say, hopefully tomorrow I can follow on with just a little bit more, at least for part of the program, to just draw on some of this history and to point out some of the lessons that we can really apply to our lives and to our work today. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.